This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
You know, you and I do have a lot in common. What were you doing as a teenager, Daniel?
Yeah, so I'm an immigrant to the United States. I immigrated from South Korea. And so, you know, I always say this is the best country. You know, the amount of opportunities that we can have here is phenomenal. So during my teenage years, what was I doing? Well, I was very poor. So my family, we didn't have a whole lot growing up. So, you know, high school was very non-eventful for me. I didn't go to any dances or anything like that because I couldn't afford it. And, you know, I think I started real estate when I was 19. So my teenage years were very, very non-eventful, I guess you could say.
Daniel, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs and also successful real estate people have built their fortunes from the ground up.
Yeah.
And there's always this question about, are you born to do this, or is this something you just learn as a result of your environment? What do you think? Are entrepreneurs made, or are they trained? And how did your background growing up take you to where you are today? What did it teach you? What did it give you?
Yeah, that's the ultimate question, right? Nature or nurture? I'd say I'm not a natural entrepreneur. My brother is a very natural entrepreneur. So growing up, he's always, you know, wanted to sell stuff, and he's always wanted to start businesses. You know, me on the other hand, growing up, I loved to sell. I loved humans. I loved people. So I mean, I would sell Pokemon cards. I would sell, you know, different types of candy. I mean, I just love to sell, you know, and I love to push things and start things. But my goal initially was to be a teacher. I wanted to coach basketball and teach high school and be a youth pastor and work at a church on the weekends. That was my goal. And it wasn't until my brother started a DJ company and he wanted to kind of, you know, he invited me to be on it and whatnot. And that's when I kind of learned, like, wow, I really love this stuff. So I wouldn't say I'm a natural entrepreneur, but I have a natural knack with people. So I love working with people, meeting new people, hearing people's stories, and figuring out how I can help them. And it just so happens that, you know, real estate was the thing that God wanted me to do. And, you know, with that and a combination of my love for people, I started going places. So I'd say, you know, there's people, this world, it's, you know, over 7 billion people on this planet, you know, and everybody is so different. I don't think it's one or the other. I think there's a lot of people who say both.
Yeah. And how did growing up in the environment where you explained coming in as an immigrant and seeing that you don't have all the wealth, I mean, you described it as, you know, growing up poor. What did that do to you? And when did you start to want more?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of kids who grew up poor, which is a lot more people than what people would think, we just think that's normal. You know, we don't see any different. We don't look at stuff like that, which is very beautiful. Because if you think about how non-transactional a child's mind is, that's the way we should be in business, right? That's the way we should be with relationships. We should, you know, care for people and not expect anything in return. So, you know, with that environment, you know, I always say my parents gave me the gift of poverty. They gave me the gift of immigrant mentality. And, you know, they taught me that you know, the world doesn't owe you anything, you know, and there are moments even today where I think I have accomplished something and I'm reminded by, you know, myself and of course my wife that I have a lot more to go. I have a lot more to learn and way more to be humble about. So, you know, I always say that the kids who grew up that way, they have an opportunity, they have a mindset. A lot of them are more advanced than what people think, but the kids who grew up, you know, they grew up rich and they grew up without a need for anything. There's nothing wrong with that either. You know, we all have our disadvantages. We all have our obstacles that we have to, you know, we have to overcome. So at one point in my life, I looked down on those people because, you know, for me, it was like, well, I, you know, came up through the ranks and I had to work for everything and those guys had to work for nothing. And I mean, little did I know that they worked hard for their own thing, right? They had their own obstacles they had to overcome that I never had to. So it humbled me. It really genuinely showed me that every individual has their own obstacles. And as entrepreneurs, it's, you know, at the end of the day, we're professional problem solvers. So we have to adopt a certain mindset.
Right. You're dealt with a certain set of cards and you have to just roll with whatever you've got and turn it into a strength if it's a weakness. You know, myself as an immigrant, my parents left East Africa in the era of this dictator called Idi Amin. So they fled to the UK, left everything behind. And I saw them work really hard. I mean, that's where I would credit my dad, who was a labor mechanic. And I'd see him toiling away under the car, busting his back, basically struggling to pay the mortgage.
Wow.
And they didn't even have a mortgage on the full property, right? They had this scheme where they only had a mortgage on half the property and they were paying rent to, you know, someone else. And there was constant worries about the house getting, you know, possessed and liquidated and, you know, terrifying, right? So for me, that's what taught me. And then I think also this concept of failure, right? When you talk about a child, children succeed so much because they fall, they tumble, they get back up. I also think when you come from this environment, you think, well, what is failure? Like, this is a familiar taste, right? Well, once you start from the bottom, you know, as much as you don't want to go back down there, you've been there before and you know how to get back up. So I think that's obviously a card that you're dealt with. And you can, as you said, you can make it a gift as your parents did. So Daniel, how did you get into real estate of all the things you could have done?
Yeah, so this is a very funny story. Don't laugh, right? But so ever since I was a young kid, you know, I grew up in America, you know, and I'm sure you have a lot of listeners around the world, right, internationally. There's a huge problem in my hometown of Chicago, in the south side of Chicago, and it predominantly revolves around the African-American community. The Black community, a lot of them deal with struggle, with poverty. And, you know, two of my best friends that I have today, you know, are formerly incarcerated. So I think they're comfortable with me sharing that. But, you know, one of them is Black and the other is Latino. And, you know, they both kind of grew up in situations where they didn't have a lot of opportunity. So the reason why I wanted to get into real estate was because I loved basketball. I loved the Chicago Bulls. My goal today is to own the Bulls, by the way, before I'm dead. And the guy who owns it now is a guy named Jerry Reinsdorf. And I read his biography. I was like, well, what did he do? So he made his money by investing in real estate. So he was a CPA and an attorney, and he invested a lot in Chicago real estate. So I read that article when I was 17 years old, and I said, that's what I got to do. I got to get into real estate if I want to buy the Bulls, so that, you know, by owning the Bulls, I can ultimately help people in the south side of Chicago. Because as you know, basketball is a very big thing, you know, in that culture. So that's what made me interested in real estate. And then, you know, when I was 19, I actually had -$187.65 in my bank account. And at one point, I was actually looking through the dumpster trying to find stuff to eat. And that's where I was. And so I'm a man of faith. I like to pray. I believe that prayers are answered. And I got down on my knees and I asked God, you got to do something here. You know, this sucks. You know, I don't want to keep eating leftover Dunkin' Donuts that they didn't sell that day from the dumpster. I don't want to keep doing that. Too many carbs, right? So, you know, God answered my prayer. And 6 months later, he sent me a mentor who was doing real estate at the time. I learned a lot from him and also what not to do from him as well. And that's kind of how my journey started. And so my interest slowly became an initiative. And then that initiative became a company. And you know, that company, thankfully, 8 years later is now an organization. So it's gnarly stuff, man. How about you? How did you get into entrepreneurship and business?
You know, I was obsessed with computer games, martial arts, and we had a school project where we had to build a website. And we only had that project in place because the school was having an inspection. The school I went to wasn't a great school. It was probably one of the worst in the UK, actually. It was the one time where, you know, we had a structured lesson plan. We built around this website and I fell in love with it. I just realized, wow, there's an avenue to express my passion. So built a martial arts website and then started building more and more websites. And before you knew it, you know, I was ranking in Google. And my voice broke early, actually. for puberty, right? So I was able to pick up the Yellow Pages and call people and convince them they need a website. Would refuse to meet in person because obviously they'd be like, this is a 15-year-old kid, right? We're not doing business with him. And from that, I just started hustling. You know, I was offering design services and trying to figure out what to do, web hosting. And eventually I realized rather than making websites for other people, I should make websites for myself. And so, yeah, I was making more money than my parents were making in ads. And my parents never understood, you know. And of course, I was a bit of a gambler and I'd reinvest everything. And, I would end up losing everything at the same time. But it was valuable lessons. So it's always been in my blood to be an entrepreneur. And, that's all I've known. That's been my strength. But I also was obsessed with reading. I mean, you see, you've got a bookshelf behind you, right? I love reading biographies. And when you study some of the most successful people, you do see real estate. It's how people have made money. And it's an asset that keeps appreciating generally. An asset that is easy to understand with nuances and it produces income. So, I found myself in the situation where when I was running Rungle, my net worth suddenly would explode. And then the next day, you're wondering what's the net worth worth? Like, everything I'm worth could be worth nothing. And when the business sold, it was acquired for $780 million by Blackstone. I swore to myself, never again do I want to be so concentrated in one stock, right? I would like my wealth to be diversified. And that's where I set out to buy real estate. I invested in real estate funds. I built my own portfolio through my own family office. And then I also joined a real estate fund where I've got a lot of my money in there. We're buying real estate now. And that also, being a tech guy, I can't help but cause trouble in real estate. And so now I'm also investing in technology startups in the real estate sector and emerging prop tech. Which is, by the way, I think, I don't know what your thoughts are, but real estate to me, it's crazy how large the industry is. It's the world's largest asset class. And yet the processes are so broken and technology has been so slow to creep in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree 100%. It's funny you mentioned that my brother and I recently just started a property management software.
Right.
So if you think about it, I mean, you're a big tech guy. You know, the technology to have a smart lock has been around for 30, 40 years. And yet, I was just talking to my friend who, he works at Keller Williams and he's acting, this is 5 years ago. And then he's like, oh, we just started doing these smart locks. And he's talking about, it's like the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm like, buddy, they have technology today that could read, certain Neuralink sensors. And they have technology today that literally can hear, what you're saying in your own home and then show ads on your Facebook and social media and Google based on what you say. I mean, that technology has been around for 30 years. I mean, so I completely doubled down on what you say. So, my brother and I, we started that and we're using it now to help better efficiently run our own real estate fund. And you're absolutely right. There's a huge space in the real estate tech opportunity. I mean, somebody needs to take advantage of that, and I think that's going to create the next generation of billionaires. Not millionaires, but billionaires.
Absolutely. I'm always preaching on this channel that the next $1 trillion startup is going to come from the prop tech industry. If there are only three areas to be in today that are interesting, in my view, it would be prop tech or cryptocurrency or health tech. And prop tech is the one that, naturally I gravitate to. Unlike crypto, real estate at least doesn't just appreciate, but it provides income. With crypto, right, you're dealing with a quite volatile valuation and it's a new asset class. And with health tech, there's tremendous barriers to entry and there's regulations as well. And you need to generally come from a very science background to really understand it, very nuanced. So prop tech is the next best place to be, or it might be the best place to be. Speaking about smart locks, by the way, we did an interview recently with the founder of Proxy that raised almost $17 million, I think. And it was fascinating to hear his story. And it's crazy. I mean, why is it that the real estate industry, in your view, has been so slow to adopt technology?
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying it now, I think for 2-3 years, but it's an industry that for the longest time have been so contingent on services, on brokers and realtors. And if you think about any industry that have vastly grown in technology in the last 10, 15 years, they've always been product consumer centric industries. You know, I mean, if you think about the smartphone and how much that's progressed, I mean, my goodness, I looked at a photo of myself 10 years ago. And do you remember the Motorola Razors? Do you remember those phones? And they were like, they were the bee's knees, you know?
Yeah. My old Nokia 3210.
That's right. My phone
covers, right? I missed that.
Yeah.
Maybe Pokemon phone covers.
That's right. The Nokia brand phones, they were indestructible. You know, they always made a joke that you either throw a grenade or you throw a Nokia, you know, they're going to have the same effect, you know?
Smartphones were literally as big as a brick.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, I mean, if you think about how much they've progressed, it's because, you know, it's a product that's easily changed and manipulated through research, through tech development and whatever. So it's very quick, right? The technology can be moved very quickly. Kind of how, you know, an organization, if you have, you know, a startup, they're much more mobile. They tend to be more mobile compared to the organization that has 10,000 employees. And if you want to make a move, you got to go through, you know, 17 middle managers and get their approval to get something done. And you know, real estate space is very service heavy. It's very broker and realtor heavy. And I believe that one day, you know, maybe it's 10, 15 years from now, this might be a little controversial, but I believe brokers and realtors will not be at the forefront of the industry 10, 15 years from now. I think it's going to be a lot of the tech guys, you know, kind of like what you said, I'll double down, you know, that's where I think we're going.
The natural progression of any industry is to wipe out inefficiencies. Yeah. And you have these so-called middle men because there is information asymmetry between or within the marketplace. And you need a broker or an intermediary to help you navigate things. And I think technology is putting things at our fingertips right here, where eventually it's hard to justify why you would pay a large commission to an intermediary unless there's real technology in the value chain. So that's one aspect that we see PropTech/FinTech, the middleman being replaced. And in my last startup that I started, we went after the agencies. So the agencies were the ones who controlled the ad spend for large companies. And we built a technology-driven agency pretty much. And we started using that to own our own ad space, right? And eventually, you know, we built a business that had a very good exit. And it was all based on the premise of the day. Remember when I started out, people were like, you can't try to jump over the middlemen, the agencies, they're too powerful.
Yeah.
Now in any company, that's true in the early days, and you have to partner with them and figure out where you fit. But long term, I saw, you know, we were responsible for a large number of agencies in the mobile sector just either disappearing or, you know, the ones that embraced our tech actually, you know, did very well. Waiting to see what happens here in real estate too, you know. Do you think it's a scary time, especially for your viewers and, you know, people on this show?